our report looks at right around Australia, every property, every suburb, and looks at what is the risk that those insurance premiums either are now or will be in the coming years, basically out of reach in terms of affordability. And it's pretty shocking, the results that we've seen in that report.
Welcome to The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar, Director of Media here at FS Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land, and we pay our respects to the traditional custodians of country and elders, past, present, and emerging. Is climate risk getting unduly sidelined by Trump's tariffs? Not if we can help it. In this episode, we talk about how climate risk is inextricably linked to the cost of living crisis, particularly its impact on insurance costs for households and companies. Joining us to talk about it is Nikki Hutley, climate counselor and chief economist. Nikki, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Now, while Trump has been busy draining the swamp, as he calls it, the world is in danger of a washout if climate change isn't restored as a key government priority. What do you think of the spate of climate policy reversal since Trump became president?
Look, I think there's a lot of things that we need to be concerned about, particularly the fleeing from organizations like Net Zero Banking Alliance. That's deeply concerning. This is the critical decade. We need to move faster, not slower. And so anything that slows, let alone derails the process, is concerning. That said, we're still seeing commitment to carry forward plans. I think we're seeing a raft of things, especially if you look at for example, the International Maritime Organization's recent decision to, they're not there yet, but to keep going forward with the idea of effectively a carbon price on that industry and net zero targeting. That's still encouraging that there's those of us that are still moving forward.
So let's assume a more educated public and the institutional investor base can more than compensate for the lack of regulatory support. Tell us about the latest research from the Climate Council on this.
Yeah, I think we're seeing everywhere an increasing awareness of the costs of climate inaction and the damages that, last year was the first breach of 1.5 degrees. And often that first year of breach is the signal that the next 20 years are in fact going to average over that level. So we're in critical territory here. What we've done with the Climate Council report is to look at the impact on insurance affordability, something Australians, but also right around the world, California fires, that everybody is grappling with. We've seen insurance rise at its peak. It was going up by 16%. And this is off the back of course, higher construction costs, but also increased frequency and severity of floods and fires in Australia. And this year now, the extropical cyclone Alfred. Our report looks at right around Australia, every property, every suburb, and looks at what is the risk that those insurance premiums either are now or will be in the coming years, basically out of reach in terms of affordability. And it's pretty shocking, the results that we've seen in that report.
If you're listening to this right now, we will include a link to the report in our show notes. It's pretty comprehensive, and I did try it myself, Nikki, making sure looking at the suburbs affected. Can you give us an example? There is this amazing climate risk map in that report linking to the insurance cost. Give us one example.
We've got one in 23 properties in Australia are already effectively uninsurable. So that's 4.4% of homes, or over 660,000. And that's at high risk. That's where the damage assessment is at least 1% of the value of the home. So just the house, not the land. So say your home is worth $500,000, that's saying that on average, you're going to have $5,000 worth of damage every year, which is a pretty, pretty big risk to that. But in some areas, the figures are much higher. Obviously, the Northern Rivers area of New South Wales, some of those particular areas, sometimes 80 to 90% of properties are affected. Shepparton's another one where you've got more than 16,000 properties there at risk. And we're talking about some areas are quite small. We'd only looked at areas where there were at least 100 properties, but some areas we're talking in the thousands where you've got very high levels of risk. And this is not to scare people, but it's to alert them if they're not already aware from their insurance premiums, and to raise the conversation with the government about well, what do we do about this situation where, you know, those who are most in need of insurance are actually those that are most likely to not have it, or at least to not have adequate cover, which then puts pressure back on the government. And of course, we saw in the budget papers this year, $13.5 billion in disaster recovery funding spent in the last couple of years. I mean, that's just not sustainable from a budget bottom line perspective, let alone what's happening to households.
You've mentioned quite a lot of numbers there, but just the 5,000 alone as saying any given house or, you know, one in 23 will be needing to prepare for this. Now, talk about how we're all in this together. What is the climate risk held by listed companies, particularly the banks? Because whether you work in sustainability or you don't, we all have our super funds exposed to the financial services sector.
Yeah. And of course, we're getting better at reporting on climate-related and now nature-related disasters and the risk that those pose to portfolios, to businesses. This is, of course, you know, even if you're not living in one of those really severely prone areas, we're all paying higher insurance premiums right across the board. They're higher for some, for those high-risk areas, but all of us have seen our premiums go up, irrespective of where we live. Reinsurance costs are going up. Everything is, you know, the disaster recovery, as I said, is going up. So that means our tax bills are going to go up. As you mentioned, our superannuation is exposed. We know that the properties that we looked at, it's not just people's homes, it's businesses as well. If your business gets damaged and you can't keep going, you know, there's economic shocks. We know that we took a hit earlier in the year because of the cyclone, probably a quarter of a percentage point off GDP. Now, that might seem like a small amount, but when you're not growing at, you know, 2%, and of course, growth rates are now expected to be much lower because of Trump's tariffs, the role of sustainability people in helping us shift the dial to make sure companies are not only aware of their risk, but aware of their footprint, because those two things are not exactly the same. They're different sides of a coin. So it's really important that sustainability experts help us and help the corporate sector in particular to understand that not only risk, but potential action footprint reduction.
So say, for example, going back to the climate risk map, what are the utilities of this map for sustainability committee or responsible investing team members or executives?
Well, I think if you've got a business, and this is particularly relevant to the banks, you mentioned those. If you can't get insurance, then you can't get a mortgage on your property, whether it's a home or a business. And you know, the banks don't always check in out years; they might in the first year, but this is something they're going to have to check more. The same as if you're investing in a portfolio of properties, whether it's, you know, the hotel business or even the retail business. All of these have increased risk exposure in particular areas. So that means that if you're relying on rent from a shopping center that's got a very high risk of exposure to flood and or fire, you know, you've got to look at, well, what does that mean for your long-term cash flows and your, therefore, your long-term price of your investment? This is hitting everybody. And, you know, you really have to be having your head under a rock at the moment to not see what's been happening around the world, as well as Australia in the last couple of years in terms of the cost of those disasters.
There is definitely a strong sense of denial right now on the reality. But for those of us who are brave enough to look at this report and what it means, I'm particularly interested in one of the indicators there. You've put in three choices: no action, some action, and enough action. How can investors, whether it's super funds or organizations such as the Climate Council, encourage these public companies, whether they're banks or non-banks, to implement enough action to reduce climate risk?
Yeah, look, I think this is actually a very difficult question to answer, because we have seen, particularly with a lot of fossil fuel or mining companies that have been moving down the path of sustainability, and they've started to pull back because they've said, well, shareholders want greater returns, that you know, there's less pressure. You've seen the Net Zero Banking Alliance, of course, start to not quite crumble, but certainly it's sprung a lot of leaks. And it can be hard. I mean, it climate action has to be a good financial and economic decision for corporates. I totally understand that. That said, there are a lot of climate actions that can be taken that make economic and financial sense in the short term. We know that a lot of customers want more sustainability. With how much green premium they're prepared to pay is still, it's very varied depending on different markets. But examining how you can make good climate and financial decisions, things like investing in renewable energy, solar panels, that's an absolute no-brainer. The payback is very short and would meet hurdle rates of return for most corporates. Where you source your products from, even having carbon offsets. I'm not a great fan of offsets, but for some areas there, they're not a bad option for what you can do in the short term while you're, particularly in hard to abate sectors. But making sure that you understand that every action that you take to support climate action is one that is reducing risk. I know individually we don't make a difference, but collectively, if we're all moving together, then that does in fact make a difference. And we can't be free riders here. We can't say somebody else is going to make this difference if we don't act ourselves as well. And it's to all of our benefits to make sure we're doing the maximum we can while understanding that, yes, there are requirements for shareholder returns.
I think that's a great point. We have to be accountable, not just for the household carbon footprint, for example, but as a community, whether it's the super funds, whether it's the fund managers, and whether it's the financial planners. So there's now this new trend, this emerging trend of advisors who call themselves responsible advisors who can champion this cause as well. Now, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners in terms of the key findings of this report?
Well, I think the report, people should be at least alert, if not alarmed. We cannot continue to bury our heads in the sand on the impacts of climate change. They are becoming only too real and they are escalating from here. And it is up to each and every one of us, whether it's an individual, an advisor, a corporate or governments, to act as far as we can. Australia is very lucky. We have a lot more options. We have wealth that we can do this. Government needs support to keep going, and big organisations, fund managers, for example, can help to build that support to rally communities every bit as much as local activists can. Understanding that balance between climate and financial requirements, absolutely that's there. But also understanding the risk, because it's no longer the risk that is out there. And if I took one thing from this report, this is showing you what the damages, what the risks are now, let alone how much worse that they are going to get by 2050, by 2100. Understand investors don't necessarily want to think about 2100, but these risks are here with us now. And that absolutely should be part of everybody's understanding of their business bottom line and their investments.
Well, Nikki, well said. I am alert and I am alarmed. But once again, thank you for joining us today on the podcast.
No, thank you very much. And I would encourage your listeners to go and play with the climate risk tool and have a look at not only their own homes, but where their portfolios might be exposed.
This is The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar. Thank you for joining us.
The Greener Way podcast is a product of FS Sustainability. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.